Episode 2 of the School Psych Finds podcast, Intro to Sped Law. Welcome to School Psych Finds, the podcast, a show where we'll explore various topics related to the fields of psychology, education, human development, and of course, school psychology. I'm your host, Sophia, a nationally certified school psychologist, and these are my School Psych Finds. Welcome back to the School Psych Finds podcast. On today's episode, we're going to be covering special education, also known as SPED, and more specifically, the laws that govern special education. So we'll cover topics like IDEA, the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, and the Child Fine Mandate to really understand special education law. Just a quick disclaimer that special education is a huge topic. There are entire career fields dedicated just to this. There are lawyers and attorneys that just practice special education law. So know that this episode is a quick overview and there will be follow-up episodes related to this topic. So I plan to go a bit deeper and giving you all an overview of some of the most common eligibility categories. So keep in mind, there will be episodes for things like specific learning disability, other health impairment, autism, emotional disturbance, some of the most frequent categories that students qualify for special education for. So stay tuned for that. But for today, we're going to be looking at a baseline general overview of special education so we can make sure we're all on the same page when we're talking about those different eligibility categories and the laws that govern special education. Really quickly before we begin, don't forget to subscribe and leave a review. It's free, super quick, and easy to do, and it helps support the podcast a lot. The other thing I want to make sure you know about if you don't already is that we do have a newsletter that goes out with each podcast episode. The link is on my Instagram page, on my website. I think I also will have it linked in the show notes where you can enter your email address to receive a newsletter every time an episode comes out. And that has some additional resources and finds in there for you. I never share your email with anyone and it's completely free. So I wanted to cover the topic of special education for two reasons. The first is there are a lot of misunderstandings, misconceptions, and misinformation out there about special education and really what the law says versus what people think it's supposed to say, what they've heard it says, how things have just been done, what they read online, things like that. So I wanted to bring some clarity and understanding to this topic. And then also, as school psychologists, special education is a huge part of our career, and we're supposed to be experts in that special educational law. And so I thought this would be a great subject for us to cover. Now, again, this is a huge topic, so remember, it's a brief overview, but we'll definitely be doing some additional episodes related to this topic. The other thing to know is that there are a lot of differences by state and even by district within those states. So today we're really going to be talking about what the federal law says, but just keep in mind that your state might choose to do things a little bit differently. And that's how it works really with any laws by state, right? You have your kind of global national law, so to speak, in the US, and then within the states, they can choose to kind of tailor down that law even more as long as they're within the constraints of the federal law. So on today's episode, we're briefly going to learn about what special education is, who it's for, how school psychologists are involved, and then, like I said, we'll talk a little bit more about the actual law governing it. So first, let's talk about what is special education. A simple explanation for what special education is that it's designed to be able to meet the unique needs of students with disabilities. So it's basically schools trying to meet the needs of students with disabilities in order for them to access their education. Now, in a fancier way, what this is referred to is specially designed instruction for students eligible for special education in order to access their education, and it can include things like accommodations and related services. The most common thing that people know when they think of special education is an IEP. And there's a lot of acronyms in the world of special education. It's a whole language in itself. But IEP stands for Individualized Education Program or Plan. And it's exactly what it sounds like. It's a legally protected document about the specially designed instruction that a student with a disability for special education will receive. So that plan talks about how the school is planning to meet the student where they're at. So it's going to have goals on there to talk about what kind of specially designed instruction that student needs. And every year, that team of staff members and parents are going to meet to review those goals and the progress on those goals, including any accommodations and related services. Of course, there's more things on an IEP than just that, but that's the general gist of it. And then every 3 years, the student comes up for what's called a triennial reevaluation. And that's just to say, does the student continue to have this disability? Do they continue to require this specially designed instruction? And that's a whole nother topic in itself. All right. So who is special education for? It seems like this would be something that for most of us who work in special education or school psychologists should kind of already know. But there are a lot of misunderstandings about this specifically, and I had the unfortunate experience of learning that really more through social media on my TikTok, where my video got pushed out to some other populations other than people maybe who work in education. And so I got to see how much misinformation is out there, unfortunately. But I kind of already knew that through my work as well. It just came out a little bit differently. And so special education, just to be super clear, is for students with disabilities, and the laws governing special education were created to protect students with disabilities. And so schools might need to do a better job of helping to inform and educate families who have children with disabilities, who are in special education, what that explicitly means. Disability is not a bad word. It's not something we should be afraid to use. But I know that it's a very sensitive subject, obviously. It means that a child has some additional needs that aren't being met through the general education system. And it can be hard to share those findings and to talk to parents about that. But really, we're not being quote unquote nice when we avoid using the word disability. Really, what's happening is you're just protecting your own feelings, and you need to be respectful and kind, but transparent with families. And this certainly doesn't all fall on the school system, because I know, unfortunately, there are times when we share these things and some families and people in general still don't fully understand or remember that we've shared that for a variety of reasons. And it's not just the families. There are plenty of members in the school system who might not fully understand what special education is or who it's for either. So definitely, just kind of nationally, all stakeholders involved, we just want to get a better understanding for everyone about what special education is. Now, a really important thing to understand and distinguish is what a disability is for special education purposes. And this can get kind of sticky and a little bit frustrating for some people, because there is a lot of semantics and there's also a lot of differences. We have the idea of a disability kind of in layman's terms, like what the general population thinks a disability is. Then we have things like medical diagnoses. We have a disability under the ADA, the Americans with Disabilities Act. That's defined one way, and that's for 504s. And then we have disability for special education, and that is its own law and defined in another way. So this is really important to spread awareness about. Under the law, which the law for special education is IDEA, the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, and I'm going to go into that a little bit later in the podcast, the main things you need to know about that, but I want to get through what a disability is first. So under IDEA, a disability is one of 14 federally defined categories, and some states have 13. There's an extra one that they can choose to adopt. They don't have to. It's called developmental delay. Let's go through the other ones. There are two that are kind of generally speaking related to cognition, and that would be specific learning disability. And a common specific learning disability is dyslexia. And then there's intellectual disability. Then there are a few that are kind of related to social and emotional functionings. So that's autism and emotional disturbance. Federally, it's called emotional disturbance. Some states have changed the name to be emotional disability. And then we have other health impairment, which is also a quite common category that students fall under. And this can be due to a variety of different health conditions, but the most common one that I see is ADHD. Then we have some less common ones, speech and language impairment. We have traumatic brain injury, orthopedic impairment, multiple disabilities, and then there's about four categories that are for deaf and blindness, so vision and hearing needs. The other piece about what a disability is for special education purposes is you have to meet the criteria for one of those 14 disability categories, 13 if your state doesn't have developmental delay, and you have to require specially designed instruction or related services through that specially designed instruction. So it's a two-pronged eligibility, and usually how we know that you require that specially designed instruction is if you can't access your education in the general education setting, so your education would be significantly adversely impacted. Now, the other thing to note is while there are 14 federally defined disability categories, the law does not require that states use that labeling system for special education. And this is where some confusion comes up. There aren't very many states that are considered non-categorical, but some misunderstandings I've seen there is that in those non-categorical states, some people then think that means that that doesn't constitute a disability. It does. Those states just aren't requiring the student to have which category label they're under. It's more just like, okay, you're eligible for special education. We don't need to put for what specific reason. But most states do use the categorical system where they will explicitly say which disability the student has as a way for people to kind of better understand their needs initially. The other thing to know is that not all of the disability categories, even federally, are fully comprehensively defined. And this poses an issue, and it's something that I definitely think in special education and in school psychology that we need to figure out. You know, if these are federally defined disability categories, they really should be the same across states, in my opinion. And we see issues with that in a handful of the eligibility categories, not all of them, but really the most popular one would be specific learning disability. And the reason for that is there are three different models nationally that you can use to qualify as having a specific learning disability. And states can determine if they're going to use two of them, three of them. And then states can also allow districts to determine which ones they're going to use. So a student could be eligible in one state as a student with a specific learning disability and then go through a reevaluation in a completely different state and not meet eligibility, which is a little bit crazy in my opinion, but that is a subject for another episode. I do plan on making separate episodes for a few of the disability categories to go into a little bit more detail, because again, this is a monster of a topic. We could talk about it probably for a year on end just on this podcast, but I'm not going to do that because there's other topics I also want to make sure to talk about. Before we get into the law of special education, we're going to talk about how school psychologists are involved in special education. So as I said earlier, we are considered experts in education and psychology, of course, and we have significant training in special education law. We are part of this process before the student even enters the world of special education. We are part of the team that identifies and assesses and evaluates students for disabilities for special education purposes. We also often go to IEP meetings, sometimes all of them, sometimes only the ones we're intimately involved with after testing. Some students, as a related service, have counseling, and so we are often the service providers for that counseling as it relates to an IEP. And then we do a lot of consultations and collaborations with members of that student's IEP team and through that process. Now we're going to talk about the laws governing special education. And so we're going to take a step back in time to go all the way back to the first law for special education. Now, take a moment and just kind of think about this. How long ago do you think special education started, or when do you think the first law for special education was? Chances are, you are probably not going to guess, unless you have training in this, that it was just only started in 1975. Now, for some of you younger people out here, you're going to be like, oh, that sounds like so long ago, the 1900s. That was less than 50 years ago. And that law was the Education for All Handicapped Children Act, EHA. So we need to keep in mind that special education is an evolving, growing field, and it's still somewhat of a baby. Then about 15 years later, in 1990, that EHA law turned into what we know today as the main special education law, and that's the IDEA that I was referring to earlier. It's the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act. Now, what IDEA does is outline a bunch of rights for students with disabilities in regard to their public education. Any school that is receiving federal funding must provide students access to a free, appropriate public education. Public is a key word there, and the acronym for free, appropriate public education is what you'll hear referred to as FAPE, and this is for eligible children with disabilities. So students who are eligible for special education because of their disability, and it must ensure that those students receive that specially designed instruction and related services. It also outlines a bunch of state requirements for that, as well as families' rights and protections about consent options and being informed, their rights to make decisions on behalf of their children and be informed about what's going on in regards to special education. Now, IDEA has two kind of big parts that are commonly referred to. As school psychologists and really in the school system, we're mostly dealing with Part B of the IDEA, and that relates to children ages 3 to 21 or until they graduate high school if they're graduating on a standard diploma. It requires that a student has access to FAPE and in the least restrictive environment. And so that's another popular acronym in special education. Least restrictive environment, the acronym for that is LRE. And what that means, what is the least restrictive environment for this child with a disability? So back in the day, the common kind of idea of what special education looked like, I think to the general public, was that a student with a disability would be in a separate school or in a separate classroom for special education. That is no longer the case for all students, and I don't actually know if it was ever the case for all students, but that I think it was more commonly the case until we had this LRE come up. And so what this LRE means is that we want to educate children with disabilities as much as possible within their general education classrooms and around their non-disabled peers to the fullest extent possible. So we want to remove them from their kind of natural environment as little as possible, but we sometimes need to do that more. So for some students with disabilities, being in a separate classroom that's just for special education students or being in another school that's just geared towards teaching special education students is their least restrictive environment, and that is what they need in order to access their education and learn appropriately for their profiles. Other students, that's definitely not their LRE, so this goes back to it being an individualized education plan. Every kid is going to need something different. Now, Part C of IDEA is for children before the age of 3. So from the time they're born until 2, all the way until they turn 3 years old. And this is for children with disabilities who require early intervention services. And so this is both for the child and their family. And what this is called is the Early Intervention Program for Infants and Toddlers with Disabilities. And what's created is an individualized family services plan. The last part of IDEA that I want to make sure to cover is called the Child Find Mandate, and this is under Part B of IDEA. I think this mandate is often misunderstood, misreferred to, and so I want to make sure that we cover it in a way that helps make things a little bit more clear. As a general quick overview, Child Find basically says that all states have to have a way of identifying and evaluating students who need special education. That they must find those kids and they must evaluate them. Now, a common misunderstanding here is who needs special education and what is a disability, which we just talked about earlier in the episode, right? It has to be one of those 14 categories and they have to require specially designed instruction. And so this is where things get a little bit sticky again, is people think, oh, well, my child has a private diagnosis. That means you have to evaluate them for special education. And sometimes that is the case, that a child has a private diagnosis, a medical diagnosis, and they really might need special education, and we do need to evaluate them. Sometimes we're not sure and we might need to evaluate them to make sure to know one way or the other. But if the school doesn't suspect that that child might have a disability as outlined in IDEA, which again includes requiring specially designed instruction, then they are not required to evaluate them. Now, what the law says is that all states must have policies and procedures in place to ensure that all children in that state from birth to 21 or until they graduate with a disability or suspected of having a disability and who need special education and related services are located, identified, and evaluated. And so this includes all children in the state, regardless of where they're being educated. And that's why one of the components of it is locating. So even if they're in private school, if they're homeless, etc., the state has to have a way of finding those kids and identifying if they might need specially designed instruction. And so for private schools, what that looks like is usually the school that's district that's closest to that private school collaborates with them, and the private school might let them know if they think that one of the students might need an evaluation, and the public school system will come in and offer to do that evaluation. It's free for families to have this happen, but the families have to consent to this happening. So the school would recommend this potentially if they think that the student might need specially designed instruction, and then the parents have the choice whether or not they agree to an evaluation to see if that is the case. There are also legal timelines, and this, as a school psychologist, is where things get really tricky and really difficult. If you've listened to my other episode about what is a school psychologist, you heard me reference that there are national shortages in school psychologists. So we often are working with caseloads that are way beyond what we're really almost capable of working with. And the timelines is really what gets us. 60 days or whatever your state has might sound like a lot of time. It's not really a lot of time when you take into account how long an evaluation takes, how comprehensive it is. And that's a part of our job that the vast, vast majority of people do not understand. And unless you're a school psychologist, you probably won't understand. But we can get into that another time too about how many hours an average evaluation takes and the report writing time that it takes as well. Now, an important thing to note here is that the child find mandate applies to the state and the public schools that are within that state. It does not apply to private schools. So if you choose to put your child into private school, the private school does not have to provide your child with an IEP or special education, but your child could still have an IEP for if they return to public school. There are students who have IDEA disabilities and have IEPs kind of on hold for them for if and when they return to the public school system. All right, I think that is a good place to stop for today. Remember that the law governing special education is IDEA. And it really hasn't been around for that long. IDEA really 1990 to 2022, that's 32 years. So it's been around less than 35 years, and special education as a whole, in terms of legislation, less than 50. So it is a new world and it's continuing to grow and evolve. There's certainly a lot of room for growth, and more specifically, I think on a national level, because I think that the differences between states cause a lot of confusion for all stakeholders, including parents, families, teachers, and special education staff. That's it for today's episode. I hope you found this informative and learned a thing or two about special education and the law governing it, and thanks for tuning in. Join our community by subscribing to this podcast and following me on my other channels, which can be found in the show notes. Lastly, if you enjoyed the podcast, it makes a huge difference if you leave a quick review. I'll see you all soon for our next School Psych Finds.